Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive and to start off a brand new week. Now that we have high school football back, Friday was a lot of fun. Outcomes weren't great for both Carbon and Emory, both suffering losses. But nonetheless, it's great to have the Friday Night Lights back. We're going to talk a little bit about both those games in just a bit. We'll give you the complete game recap. Also, you can get that at CastleCountryRadio.com. Carbon falling to Manti 40-15. We had the live play-by-play call on KRPX 95.3 The Peak. That's the first time I've ever called a Carbon high school football game without Emory being associated with it. And so it was kind of like a new experience for me personally, being at Carbon High School on a Friday night without Emory. And then on KOAL, we had Sonny Buscarini and Travis Anderson bring the play-by-play call for the Spartans. We're going to bounce back and forth throughout the year. I'll get some Emory games along with Vinny Rondinelli. Sonny and Travis will get some Carbon games. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a team effort as we bring you high school football. Not one, but two games every week this year. Like I said, we'll talk some local sports in just a bit here on the show. And we're also going to be joined by USU Eastern Vice Chancellor Greg Dart. Greg's going to join us to talk about the fall sports season, which is here. I mean, the soccer squad has already played a couple of exhibition games. We'll talk to him about that. We have rodeo, which is in session, and volleyball as well. And volleyball is coming off one of the most successful campaigns in the program's history. Coach Daniel Jensen has done a phenomenal job with that program. So we'll talk a little bit of local sports. And it is Monday, so we will be joined by Bill Lasky, former Major League Baseball pitcher. Spent his time with the San Francisco Giants. Now he's an analyst for Sports Bay Area NBC Sports. And he also does some play-by-play for the Sacramento Rivercats AAA affiliate in the Bay Area of California as well. So looking forward to that interview. It's going to be a really fun show, and we might as well start with some NFL. Preseason week two, it's gone. I'll tell you, teams are getting wise, let me put it that way. But there's also some bad scheduling. Saturday, we had the Rams and the Raiders. Bad scheduling. Why? Because those two teams play week one. Neither team's going to play any starters in that game. It's going to be so vanilla, and that's what it was. It was vanilla football. That's bad scheduling on behalf of the NFL. Great that the Raiders were back in Los Angeles, because they're the, you know what, even as it stands right now, with the Raiders being in Las Vegas, they are more Los Angeles' team than the Chargers are. And I think that was evident by the attendance of a preseason game this past Saturday. Now, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about attendance and preseason football today, but we will talk some NFL, and actually, we'll start right now, because Adrian Peterson, who we know is on his way to Canton, this guy is a surefire Hall of Famer, was a free agent, has signed a contract with the Washington Redskins, who have been bitten by the injury bug, most noticeably Darius Geis, who tore his ACL, so his season was over before it even began. Now, the Redskins were looking at multiple named running backs. So what I mean by named, Adrian Peterson is obviously a name. Jamal Charles was another running back that they were looking at, but they elected to go with Adrian Peterson. Here's Jay Gruden talking about that process.
Like I said, we've had very unlucky situations with our running backs, with obviously Geis and Marshall and Samaje. Something else happens, then we're going to be really, really, really thin. So we just want to make sure we're covering all our bases right now, and we'll address it when we feel like we have to.
I don't mind this signing for Washington at all. It's a one-year deal for Peterson. I'm not quite sure what type of production he will bring the Redskins. But anytime you bring in an aging vet, to me, I'm always interested in that, always. He's going to give Washington depth. at a spot where they are extremely thin. The starter right now is Kelly. He's going to be the starter out of the backfield. Rob Kelly is the starter. Chris Thompson is going to be their third down back. So I don't know where Adrian Peterson fits in. Capri Bibbs is also fighting for a roster spot, so he may not even make the final roster. This late in the game for him to grab a job tells me that Adrian Peterson still has something left in the tank. Among players with at least 150 rushes over the past two seasons, Peterson has averaged just 3 yards per carry. That's the third fewest per rushing attempt in that time. But he's 12th all-time on the NFL rushing list. And remember last year when the Cardinals brought him in? He had a dynamic first contest. Remember that? And everybody thought, well, maybe there's a spot in the league for Adrian Peterson. Then after that, he wasn't very good, and he was released this offseason. Remember, the Saints traded AP to the Cardinals after he signed a two-year contract with New Orleans after being released by the Minnesota Vikings. It's been a weird journey for Adrian Peterson over the last little while, but now he's on his way to Washington. For how long, we don't know, but he's definitely going to provide depth to a team that desperately needs it. Now, if we step away from the NFL, there is some, I guess, good news coming out of college football. The AP Top 25 preseason poll was released today. That's big, because you know we're just a couple of weeks away from the season. And really, that's what we are. We're 10 days away from the first Utah Ute football game. Alabama will start the season number one. No surprise there. It does mark a rare occurrence, though. They are the second team to be ranked number one in the preseason AP poll for the third straight year. It's happened only one other time in NCAA history. Alabama received 42 out of the 61 first-place votes. Clemson is number two. They get 18 first-place votes. Georgia is number three. Wisconsin is fourth. Now, the Badgers got one first-place vote. Ohio State is number five. So the AP poll started in 1950. And since that time, only Oklahoma in 85, 86, and 87 had started number one in three straight years until now. So obviously, the voters, the pundits, they believe that Alabama is the team to beat. Let's be honest, they are. They are the consensus number one. I know as a college football fan, anytime something positive happens with the ACC, you tend to roll your eyes and say, of course they are. I know, trust me, I know, because I'm that way too. But let's be real, they are the best team in the country, and so they will start the preseason number one. We take a look at 6 through 10. Number 6, Washington. 7 is Oklahoma. 8, Miami. 9, Auburn. 10 is Penn State. 11 through 15, Michigan State, Notre Dame, Stanford, Michigan, and USC. 16 through 20, TCU, West Virginia, Mississippi State, Florida State, and Va Tech. And then 21 through 55, Central Florida, Boise State, Texas, Oregon, and LSU. That's the top 25. As far as the Utes go, they would be ranked number 28. They got 60 votes, 8 behind Florida, well behind South Carolina, who got 96 points. They would be number 26. The Pac-12, not getting a lot of love. Washington is number 6. You could make the argument that Washington should be a top 5 team. To me, I mean, I'm looking at the two polls comparing. There's a big discrepancy in the AP and the coaches poll. Wisconsin is number 4 in the AP poll, number 7 in the coaches poll. If you look at Washington, number 6 in both, and to me, Washington could very easily be a top 5 team. But outside of that, the Pac-12 not getting a lot of love. You'd have to go all the way to 13 at Stanford. They're 13 in both polls. USC is 15 in both polls. Really not a big difference between the two. Auburn, Penn State swapped. Notre Dame and Michigan State swap positions, but the Pac-12 not getting a lot of love as far as teams that are ranked. Oregon is number 24, and that surprises me. They're not ranked in the coaches poll. I don't know that they should be, but we have Oregon, USC, Stanford, Washington. So four teams ranked in the Pac-12 and the AP Top 25, which was released earlier today. That means college football's here, and there's plenty of talking points. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Let's take a look at the schedule for Major League Baseball, because there's some very important games as far as division races go. All the action is going to begin at 5 o'clock. It is a short slate of games, but at 5 o'clock we get Baltimore at Toronto. The Pirates will play host to the Atlanta Braves. We get Cleveland at Boston. The Twins will play host to the White Sox. We get San Francisco at the Mets. and the Tampa Bay Rays will play host to Kansas City. All of those games in the 5 o'clock hour. One in the 6 o'clock hour, Cincinnati at Milwaukee. The Brewers struggling a little bit. We'll see if Chase Anderson can get them moving back in the right direction as they take on the last place Reds. 8 o'clock hour tonight, some huge games. Oakland, who is just a game back of the World Series champion Astros, will play host to Texas. Should be a win for Oakland. And if they can get some help from a struggling Seattle Mariner team who takes on the Astros at 8:10, the A's and the Stros could be tied at the top of the AL West by the end of the night. That is insane to think about. The Dodgers, who are two games back of the Arizona Diamondbacks and one back of the Colorado Rockies, will take on the St. Louis Cardinals at 8:10. The Cardinals right now, a half game back of the Brewers in their division race, and I believe they're four back of the Chicago Cubs. So some very big baseball in the 8 o'clock hour tonight. And again, we'll talk more Major League Baseball coming up in just a bit. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Plenty more coming up. Local sports recap. We'll give you the high school football results from Friday. We'll talk to Greg Dart, Vice Chancellor of USU Eastern, and we'll catch up with Bill Lasky. It's all straight ahead right here on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And the high school football season opened up throughout the state of Utah this past Friday. Both Carbon and Emory High School were both in action, and unfortunately, both teams came up short. We begin with Emory High School. The Spartans opened up the season with a 3-0 lead on the Richfield Wildcats in the first quarter as Brock Winter connected on a 30-yard field goal. From that point on, it was all Richfield. The Wildcats led 7-0 at the end of the first quarter and 20-3 at halftime, but the game got out of control in the third quarter as Richfield scored 22 points to open up a 42-9 lead going into the fourth quarter. The lone touchdown of the contest came from Emory's Zion Gibson, who scored on a 12-yard run. Emory will have an opportunity to log one in the win column as they travel on the road this Friday to take on the Grand Red Devils. Live coverage will begin on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM beginning at 6:30 p.m. with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. Kickoff is slated for 7 p.m. Now we stick with high school football, but we move over to Carbon High. And Friday night on KRPX 95.3 The Peak, the Dinos suffered a 40-15 loss to the Manti Templars. This contest was highly competitive for both teams early on in the contest. Manti led 12-0 at the end of the first quarter. But the Dinos answered early in the second quarter as Colin Lewis scored on a one-yard run to cap off a highly efficient drive for Carbon. Connor Fawcett added the extra point, and the Dinos were within five. Manti added one more touchdown before the end of the first half and entered the break with a 19-7 lead, dominating the third quarter 14-0, giving Manti a 33-7 lead entering the fourth and final quarter. The Dinos would add one more touchdown late in the game as Jalen Dennis was the recipient of a 39-yard touchdown pass from Noah Jones. Carbon added the two-point conversion on the ensuing play. The score ended 40-15. Now, like Emory, Carbon will also be on the road this Friday. They will travel to meet the Payson Lions. Start time for this contest is set for 7 p.m. Live coverage will begin on 95.3 The Peak, beginning at 6:30 p.m. with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. Also, remember, you can listen to Carbon and Emory football all season long by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. With school officially back in session, fall sports will pick up heavily over the next 5 days. We'll take a look at the week's schedule. Tomorrow, the Carbon High School tennis squad will travel on the road to Richfield. The cross-country team will open up the season a little bit later on this week on Thursday as the Dinos will travel to Wayne for an invitational. The Carbon High School soccer team will return to action tomorrow with a region contest on the road against the Union Cougars and follow that up Thursday with another league contest, this time against Providence Hall. And again, football will be back in session on Friday with a contest against Payson and the volleyball team, who participated in the North St. Pete Invitational over the weekend, will take on the Emory Spartans on Wednesday. Now for Emory High School, it'll be much the same. Football will return to the field on Friday to take on the Grand Red Devils. The Emory High School golf team will return to action later this week with a trip to San Juan. The Emory High School soccer squad, the girls' soccer team, will continue the season tomorrow with a road trip to Beaver. And then Thursday, they'll take on Gunnison. The cross-country team, who participated in the Sugar House Invitational over the weekend as far as JV goes, but the varsity squad will open up the season later this weekend against Westlake on the road. And the Emory High School tennis team will also be in action on Thursday. And the volleyball team will open up the season against Carbon this Wednesday. For a complete schedule of the high school sports season, just make sure you visit CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
Back on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports, right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We're going to get rolling by talking some local sports in the junior college front. Now, the soccer season, it's off and rolling. Exhibition games already in progress for both the USU Eastern men and women. Volleyball, it's right around the corner. And before you know it, we're going to be talking about basketball in the winter sports season. But right now, student-athletes reporting, getting set for the first week of college, and joining us right now to talk a bit about that, we have USU Eastern Vice Chancellor Greg Dart. Greg, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Definitely, definitely. Fall sports season is here. I know the soccer squad is off and rolling. I can't believe how fast summer went by. It's not a bad thing at all because, again, soccer has already played a couple of exhibition games. Volleyball is gearing up for their season. Rodeo is gearing up for their season. It's a fun time because then that takes us into the winter sports season and into the spring. I mean, we're ready to start all over. It's like hitting the reset button.
It is, and it is pretty amazing. I mean, it just seems like we had our last baseball and softball games, and we're right in the thick of it again.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking to Coach Bennett, and we were going over the last 5 years, and I told him, boy, soccer's not a new program anymore. But 5 years, it doesn't seem like it's been 5 years, but it has. I mean, this is the fifth year for that program, and of course, he's leading both the men and the women, but I think it's safe to say it's no longer a new program, right?
No, it's the oldest program in our conference. It's in this whole region. And it's a program that has really been established as a solid program that gets just top-notch players and is going to compete year in and year out for what now is a conference championship, which is exciting.
5 years, Coach Bennett's been the lead of both the men and the women's program. Is it surprising to you that he's had the success that he has had juggling two programs? I mean, that seems like an awful lot.
It is. It's an awful lot. I wouldn't say it's surprising because if anybody can do it, it's him. Mm-hmm. He brought in that experience from several other places. But it is something as we're juggling. I mean, this year between a men's varsity team, a women's varsity team, and a men's junior varsity team, we have nearly, I mean, it's in the high 90s number of student athletes. And you think about just trying to run a program like that. And so we've been able to avail ourselves to a little more help than we've had in the past with student assistants, students who were here before and are either on the undergraduate or graduate level and want to get into coaching. And then Jared Woodhouse, who's been the assistant coach for that whole time and really takes a lead in the men's program, has been just unbelievable for us. I mean, without him, I don't think that that Ammon could do what he does. And so it's pretty amazing to see how, you know, establishing a program like this has been difficult. But I think even more difficult has been how do we set up this program for long-term success? And Coach Bennett's been amazing in that regard.
You mentioned 90 kids, and I know soccer, part of the allure for you guys to add soccer was that student-to-athlete ratio. So if we're talking 90 soccer players, what does that look like as far as the student body count goes?
Yeah, so basically, there's been a lot of studies on this, and for every athlete that you bring in, you're usually looking, and I mean, it ranges, but from football, they say for every athlete you bring in, 2.5 other students will come just because of the allure of that sport and people bring along for soccer. We think it's about 1 to 1.5. So for 90 soccer players, that might be another 140 students that have come to campus. And so when you really look at the impact of a program like soccer and having three teams, it's a tremendous impact on student life on campus and so many other things.
It's pretty neat. I think sometimes those who maybe aren't too familiar with the athletic scene don't quite grasp what athletics can do for an institution. I mean, there's always the talk of, well, you know, they get athletic scholarships. Yeah, but I mean, you go beyond that and you look at what a program can actually do for the institution. Soccer, again, a prime example of that.
Oh, absolutely. Our institution looks a lot different right now. If 5 years ago we didn't add soccer, and a lot different in not a good way, what it adds as far as student life, what it adds as far as student involvement. And then just that one thing I don't think a lot of people understand is that the students who graduate at the highest clip, the students who have the highest average GPAs are student athletes. I mean, these are our best students on campus because of how involved they are. And I mean, you can look at that with any other involvement in theater, for example. Those students, because they're involved there, they're better in the classroom with student government. But student athletes are at the top of their class because they're so involved in the institution, and involvement brings about great things for a student.
Again, we're being joined right now, excuse me, by USU Eastern Vice Chancellor Greg Dart. Greg, soccer's off and rolling. I know that they're going to have a couple of home matches here relatively soon. How's the soccer fields look?
So this is something that's really exciting for us, is that what was formerly the Durant Elementary ground just north of campus, so adjacent to our campus and part of our campus, really, we've been undergoing about a year-long project to get soccer fields up there. Of course, growing grass in the desert is always tough.
Difficult, yeah.
But the fields are looking very good, and that's where our home games will be this year. And so a new venue, there's still pieces that we're adding to that venue, and you know, things like an electronic scoreboard, things like seating and permanent restrooms. But we're very excited to have not only one collegiate-sized soccer field, but two there, and then one below. This community, not only on our campus, but throughout the community, has been, you know, adding soccer like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you'll see over the next few years that you'll see a lot of soccer being played in this community because of the facilities that are going in on our campus, at the fairgrounds, other places.
Is there any decision as to what will become of the former soccer field, former football field?
No, not yet. So right now, we're still maintaining that as a soccer field. That's going to be used primarily for practice at this time. But there's been a lot of discussions. One of the things that we've been looking at, and that I hope we can get to here in the next 2 years, is that we'd like to have a turf facility. And we've even talked about what that might mean if we go a little bit further than that and put a bubble on it during the winter and have a year-round practice facility for lots of sports. And so that, I think, is the ultimate goal, but it's not something that I'm, you know, ready to say is going to happen in a year.
Sure. Let's move on and talk about volleyball. Danielle Jensen is back after a widely successful season, one of the most successful seasons in the program's history. That breeds excitement. There's no question about it. I was talking to Coach Jensen last week, and there is some excitement surrounding the volleyball team this year. It seems like that momentum is carried over.
Yeah, she's bringing back great sophomores. She's got probably the best recruiting class that she's ever signed coming in. And so there's a lot of excitement. The challenge, and she would be the first one to tell you this, is that you're in a conference that she was ranked in the top 20 nationally for most of the season last year. But that also meant she was fourth in the conference.
Right.
It's just a brutal, brutal conference where the national champion comes from a lot of years or definitely deep in that tournament. And so so now I think her goal is to find a way to take down those top echelon teams in the conference. Out of conference, She had several wins against teams that were in the national tournament, and convincing wins. But in our conference, getting a bid to the national tournament was not in the cards last year, just based on the fact of the top heavy conference that we have.
It's kind of nuts. I remember talking with you about this. It kind of reminded me of the SEC in football about 5 years ago.
Yeah. And so we're a little bit hopeful that maybe in a few years from now that things will shift a little bit, and looking at the top of the conference, you'll see us up there. But yeah, it's just brutal, the round robin of those four teams, and up until the last day of the season, no one knew who was going to win the regular season, but whoever won that tournament was going to, you know, do a lot of damage in the national tournament.
Yeah, to say the least. Outside of volleyball, rodeo is also picking back up. Now, this is still fairly new to the college as far as the rodeo
program. So this will be really year three, but really year two of a rodeo team. So we started as a club, basically a couple of cowboys and cowgirls that were competing. Last year we had a full women's team. We're working on a full men's team, based on some injuries and some other things. And so this is still a new sport, but as you can imagine, is a sport that has a lot of local draw, that there's a lot of people who are very interested in. It's led by two former rodeo athletes from CEU days, back when there was a rodeo team, and that's Leon McElpring and Monty Jensen. They were stars in rodeo here, and they lead the team now, are the coaches. And we had significant success last year in several areas, barrel racing being the top one, and I anticipate we'll just kind of build on that success this year. The first rodeo that they compete in is the second week of September, just after Labor Day down in southern Utah, and then 2 weeks later, so the 22nd, 23rd, will be the rodeo here, and that's been a lot of fun as we've put on a rodeo here the last 2 years, and it's been really exciting to see the community support.
A lot of stuff happening at USU Eastern as far as the athletic scene goes. Outside of that, I mean, I guess we missed the most important part. It's time for the classrooms to open back up, right, for fall semester. That's the most important aspect.
Right. So, yeah, we are coming up quick. We're about a week after the public schools here open. You know, 20th is the first day of class for the high schools and others. We're the 27th. But we're having a lot of people moving in. Our residence halls are full. We're running at capacity numbers that we haven't seen for a long time. We're seeing big increases in our upper division enrollment. It's a very exciting time to be on campus.
Well, Greg, I definitely appreciate you stopping by and giving us an update on how things are going, not only on the athletic scene, but also in the classroom. It's always fun to talk with you, and I'm sure we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks so much.
Definitely a pleasure. That's Greg Dart, USU Eastern Vice Chancellor, talking about the fall sports season at USU Eastern, which is already off and rolling. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, this is Nick Tropiano with the Anaheim Angels, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini. Here comes a comeback.
The kid is back on track, and everybody loves a time to talk some Monday baseball here on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Every Monday, we're joined by Bill Lasky, great friend of the show, joins us to talk Major League Baseball, ALNO. We talk a little bit of everything, and he's joining us right now over the phone. Bill, a pleasure as always. Thank you again for the time today.
Yeah, Monday, another good week of baseball, some more heated up divisions, and it's just, you know, the month of August is always the competitors and the leaders will lead, and the ones in the middle will fall, and each week it seems like one or two teams just keeps falling off the path to get to the playoffs.
We have about 38, 37 games to go when you take a look at some of the teams in the National League. And, Bill, with you being an analyst for the San Francisco Giants, we'll start in the NL West because this division gets more and more wacky by the day. I can't believe the Colorado Rockies are pressing right now for a division title, but they are with about 37 games to go. The Dodgers have dipped to third place. They don't have Kenley Jansen. They can't close out games. And then you have the Diamondbacks at the top of the NL West. The Giants have played pretty poor as of late. It looks like they've fallen off of the pace now, eight games back. Can we write the Dodgers off at this stage in the game, or is it still a three-pony race for that top spot in the NL West?
I believe it's still a three-pony race. You still got 38 games left, so you never know what's going to happen. They're starting to hit the ball real well. They beat up on Seattle pitching in that two-game series. And, you know, the Giants went into L.A., took two out of three. I thought they had some life. And then they go in Cincinnati, Great America Ballpark, and literally scored one run the first two games. It was pathetic. No energy out of that team. Now they're off to New York with a four-game series. And, you know, when you start looking at the Giants team, you're just wondering who they're going to pick off on that waiver wire. McCutcheon's a big name. A lot of teams talking about him, the Indians being one. And then you look at Colorado, what a great series in Atlanta. The bats have always been a positive. It's just, can they get the pitching to hold on? And Arizona's holding on as a lead in the NL West. But I really believe, just like you said, it's a three-pony race. It's good baseball, and I love watching it. And, you know, you keep looking at the scoreboard every day to see who's going to take it and who's going to fall back. And no doubt the Giants have no life, and it looks like they've fallen off in that NL West challenge.
You mentioned the Rockies, a four-game sweep of the Braves. They split a two-game set with the Astros, and they took three of four from the Dodgers. That's what the Rockies have done as of late. They've won 8 out of 10 games. And again, I think it has a lot to do with the fact that he plays in Colorado. But when you look at the statistics, Nolan Arenado leads this Rocky squad in every offensive major category outside of hits. He's batting .309, 30 home runs, 86 RBIs, a .390 OBP. If the Rockies win this division, would you give Arenado the nod for MVP in the National League?
I have no doubt I would. I mean, I've watched this guy year after year. He's getting better defensively, if you can even think that way, but he is. The offensive numbers are away from Colorado. And as you said, over 30 home runs, he's leading it. A story, another one, the shortstop's having a great year. But I have no doubt Arenado is definitely in that NL MVP race. And as you say, as it continues here in the next 6 weeks, so we're going to see who he continues to mount his attack against to get that award. But totally an honor that he deserves.
Let's move over to the NL Central, Bill. The Chicago Cubs, 71-52. Cole Hamels has been great since coming over at the trade deadline. The Milwaukee Brewers, though, are the story right now. I think everybody expected the Cubs to be at the top of the Central. The Brewers were really, I mean, this was a team that was supposed to push and really battle with the Cubs, and they have for the most part this season, but they're a half a game ahead of the Cardinals right now for second place in that Central division. What is going on in Milwaukee right now?
Yeah, I'm really surprised how they've fallen off. I thought the offense would just keep controlling that division, and it hasn't. Their pitching has not been above average, and now the Cardinals have moved in front of them. And you never can give up on the Cardinals. The Cardinals just have an organization that keeps pushes all the way through the month of September, and they've stole that division many times in the month of September. So there's no doubt the Cubs are looking over their shoulders. The Brewers are falling. As I said earlier, there's always teams that fall in the month of August and can't catch up in September, and I just wonder if that's the Brewers team this year. The Cardinals, like I said, they're hot, and they're playing good baseball, and that's a team that I always look to see where they are in the month of August and to mount that attack in September. The Cubs, I'm really surprised, Cole Hamels. He didn't pitch that well in a Texas uniform, but he's sure turned it around now for the Cubs. I was watching one of the games that he pitched, and he said, "Old Cub fans love this guy." Yeah, I would think so, too. That was a good trade for the Cubs, and he's definitely put a little fuel in that starting rotation.
If we move to the NL East, Bill, the Braves right now at the top of that division by a half game over the Phillies. I'll tell you what's so disheartening in this division, and I go back to the first segment you and I did at the beginning of the year when we were talking about who we believed would be the front runners in the division. And you and I agreed that it was going to be Washington in the East, the Cubs in the Central, the Dodgers in the West. Those were the front runners. The Nationals had a golden opportunity over the past 10 games to, if not overtake the lead in this division, to be right there going into the final 30 games, and they have now lost 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I've been watching the Nationals. It's just not clicking. Starting rotation is starting to get beat up now. You look at all the top line pitchers. Gio Gonzalez now is struggling. Of course, Scherzer's on top of the list for everything, and they just have not played that well the second half, and they're falling fast. I do believe they're either 500 or maybe a game behind, but a team that has all the assets to get into the playoffs and go through it just isn't working. And you just wonder if Dave Martinez was the right guy when they picked the manager and got rid of Dusty. Dusty did solidify that team, but the ownership didn't want him back. And now you have a young upcoming manager that's having problems putting his team back on the field to play up to that caliber of baseball in the playoffs.
Again, we're being joined right now by Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher and now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants with NBC Sports Bay Area. We'll talk more about Bill's work in just a moment. Bill, that's a quick recap of everything in the National League. Let's flip over to the AL. You and I were talking off the cuff about the AL West. The Oakland A's are now one game back of the Houston Astros. And I was out on the golf course this last week talking to a couple of friends, and they said I was crazy when I said, listen, all the talk has been about the Boston Red Sox. I get it. All the rest of the talk has been about the Houston Astros, but I now view the A's as a serious World Series contender, and I don't think the casual baseball fan quite understands how well these guys have played, and that's a factual statement. This team is for real.
No doubt about it. I was in the studio. Dave Stewart is one of the analysts for the Oakland A's, and I sat down with him, and I said, what's the magic over there? And he goes, Bob Melvin's getting electric stuff from Edwin Jackson, Cahill out of the rotation, guys that have been bounced around, and they got their life back. And with that energy, you never know what's going to happen. Chapman and Olsen on the corners have just been awesome defensively, and now they're hitting the ball out of the ballpark. You can't look out without talking about Chris Davis. That guy is just a power-hitting machine, and that's a name that should be linked in that AL MVP. But this team's for real. They took two out of three from Houston over the weekend, and even they beat up Verlander yesterday, but the offense finally caught up with the Astros, and now they have Texas and then the Yankees. So don't look behind your mirror. They may overtake Houston in this AL West and take it to the end. And if you could ever think Houston and the Yankees in the AL wild card for one game, that would be a hell of a dogfight. And I'm putting my money on the A's. The A's are going to continue to be hot, and you're going to watch them. They're going to push this AL West to be the winners of this division.
It seems like everything has just fallen in place for the A's. Now, with that, they still have had to win the games, but at the same time, their heavy push came when Houston started getting bit by the injury bug. They made the most out of their I guess you could say, opportunity that was presented to them. Bill, here's the impressive stat. They're 12 games over 500 away from home. That's how you get it done.
It sure is, and they do play well on the road. And, you know, Oakland Coliseum's a tough ballpark, but they seem to hit the long ball. It doesn't matter where they are playing. I do believe they're one of the top teams for the home run ball. And anytime you're down, I mean, even yesterday I was watching the ninth inning, they were down a few runs, and that dugout was still lively to try to get it done. So Bob Melvin, tip your hat to him, AL Manager of the Year, no doubt. And you're looking at some of the things that he's done, and Matt Williams at third base, outstanding pickup for the A's in getting him back on the field. And it's just a cohesiveness of a young team with some veteran leadership. Luke Roy, just a great, great asset behind the plate working with all these pitchers. And, of course, they're picking up relief help as the deadline comes in and out, and picking up Rodney. I thought it was a big pickup. He could be in the middle innings, and he's still got some zip on his fastball, and he's still dialed in. So, definitely, I think you got the right idea. Keep your eyes on the green and gold because they're not going away.
Well, we've talked about Chris Davis. You and I have talked about this kid before. I'll tell you I don't want to call him an unsung hero, but he's a name that doesn't get a lot of pub in that lineup. That 1-2 punch, that second punch, I should say, to Chris Davis has been Matt Olson all year long, Bill.
Yeah, it sure has. I mean, he's just a dial-in hitter. You watch that bat come all the way down, but he's got such a good whip, keeps the hips in, hits off-speed pitch, and I think he's another one of those unsung heroes in the green and gold over here. And it's just a team that's fun to watch. I mean, I'm right here watching the Giants as well as the A's flipping back and forth because they're an exciting team, and there's no team that they're in fear of. And there's nobody in this lineup that, you know, you looking at 6, 7, and 8, they're still dialed in to knock the ball out of the yard. So we're just going to see how this next 6 weeks plays out. And I'm telling you, keep your eye on them. You got the right thought in your head. The green and gold might just win this AL West.
We have a couple of games, a couple of series that begin tonight that are really key moving forward as far as the playoff race goes, Bill. Fortunately for Oakland, they get Texas at home. I mean, that should be no problem for them the way they're playing right now. But nightcap baseball tonight. We have the Astros at the Mariners. We have the Cardinals at the Dodgers. Boy, those are two huge, huge games at this stage in the season.
I believe so, too. And Houston could really push Seattle back. Of course, the Dodgers went in there and won two games on just hitting home runs left and right out of there. And Seattle, I think they're hurting. They came in here thinking that they were going to, you know, sweep the A's, and the A's whipped them 2 out of 3 before the Astros came in. So, you know, the Mariners are going to have to get something together here quick because they could push the Astros back too. So it's going to be a rock of sock'em fight there. And then you look at the Cardinals and Dodgers, and without Kenley Jansen, that's just a tough bullpen of unsung heroes, if they have any, because that bullpen is just spotty. I mean, you're getting good starting pitching. Kershaw threw the ball real well up in Seattle, but they need that closer position, and we're just going to see how long it's going to take for him to get back on the mound.
Bill Lasky, former major league pitcher and now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants. Bill, it's always great to get you on the show. Always good stuff. Before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah, you can go find me at @Lasky19 on Twitter. I'm always tweeting out stuff left and right, and then you can always look up KMBR.com and look at some of our podcasts on there. We had a real nice show last week, brought some of the old Cincinnati Reds on, even brought Brian Price on, which was just a great, great interview about pitching and some of the things he's gone through as a pitching coach with Seattle, Arizona. And then with the Reds, some of the young pitchers that he worked with, from Felix Rodriguez to a young Johnny Cueto to even Chapman. So some good stuff there, and just some good quality interviews we put on. And also, man, I enjoy doing this every Monday with you. You've got some great insight on baseball, and I hope your fans enjoy it.
I do too, Bill, because I definitely enjoy the conversation. I look forward to it each week. I know you're on the golf course right now, so I'm going to let you make sure you don't slice.
Yeah, we got to get one day off of the week, and hitting the golf ball today. So I get a quick day off, and I'm right back on TV tomorrow. So a quick on and off, but I'll take that Monday off day, my friend.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Bill, again, thank you so much for the time.
All right, have a good week.
Again, that's Bill Lasky taking out the time to join us to talk Major League Baseball. We've got a break for just a moment, but we do have plenty more Drive Time Sports coming up on this Monday edition of the show right after this.
This is John Wall from the Washington Wizards, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buskerings on KOAL 750 AM.
Wall shoots over Bayless. Dagger! John Wall with a career-high 47 points.
Back to the final touches on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. Jumped all the way around. One thing we didn't talk about, though. It seems like, boy, the New York Jets are popping up a lot lately. For a team that hasn't been very good in a very long time, they got an interesting situation at quarterback. General manager Mike McCannon was talking about the team's quarterback competition this afternoon. And boy, this guy really has the hots for Sam Darnold, as he should. Look, Jet fans in general should. I think the Jets got a steal at number 6 grabbing Sam Darnold. This isn't Mark Sanchez years ago. This wasn't a reach. This was a guy who was a bona fide number 1 prospect. And they were able to grab him at number 6 without moving up. Now, with that comes, again, a very interesting conversation because Teddy Bridgewater has not looked bad. Darnold does look great, and Josh McCown is capable. To me, Josh McCown is the perfect backup. Perfect backup to Sam Darnold. That leaves Teddy Bridgewater the odd man out. And at some point, some team in the league is going to make a call for a trade. Now, I don't know what the market will hold for a guy like Bridgewater. But McKinnon did nothing to rid the speculation that Bridgewater could be dealt. Darnold's getting the majority of practice reps with the number one team for the second straight week. I believe he's going to be the starter come week one, and he should be if he can play. The idea that a quarterback needs to sit a year, that's gone. That's squashed. Forget about that. Cam Newton didn't have to sit for a year. Andrew Luck didn't have to sit for a year. Robert Griffin III was terrific his rookie season, and that injury that he suffered was the detriment to his career. Had nothing to do with the Redskins throwing him into the fire. Carson Wentz was fine his rookie season. Jared Goff was a project to begin with, and the Rams knew he was a project. Plus, Jeff Fisher hasn't really developed any talent in how long. His second year, he was fine. The idea that you have to sit behind a quarterback is stupid. You don't have to. Does it help? Maybe. Could stunt growth. You could look at it one of two ways. To me, Darnold is the clear favorite in New York. Start him from day one. And while I really like Tyrod Taylor in Cleveland, I honestly think that you could probably start Baker Mayfield right now. What do you have to lose? Bridgewater has a lot of trade value. Bridgewater has played really well in two preseason games. He's only 25 years old. He has a $5 million base salary plus incentives. That means that this guy is probably on his way out, and I think there are plenty of teams in the NFL that could use a guy like Teddy Bridgewater. Remember, he's from the same draft class as Blake Bortles. Maybe the Jaguars could inquire about Teddy Bridgewater. Maybe that would make sense. The Denver Broncos should be hot to trot right now for Teddy Bridgewater, I'm telling you. Bronco fans want to boo Paxton Lynch. If you think that Case Keenum is the answer in Denver, wrong. I'm telling you, wrong. Not the answer in Denver. Broncos should be all over Teddy Bridgewater. That's going to do it for this Monday edition of the show. We'll be back again tomorrow. I want to thank Bill Lasky. I want to thank Greg Dart. Always great to get those two on the show. We'll do it again tomorrow. Be safe. I'm out.